Good day, and welcome everyone to the Lockheed Martin third quarter 2016 earnings results conference call. Today's call is being recorded. At this time, for opening remarks and introductions, I would like to turn the call over to Mr. Jerry Kircher, Vice President of Investor Relations. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, Andrea, and good morning, everyone. I'd like to welcome everyone to our third quarter 2016 earnings conference call. Joining me today on the call are Marillyn Hewson, our Chairman, President, and Chief Executive Officer, and Bruce Tanner, our Executive Vice President and Chief Financial Officer. Statements made in today's call that are not historical fact are considered forward-looking statements and are made pursuant to the safe harbor provisions of federal securities law. Actual results may differ. Please see today's press release and our SEC filings for a description of some of the factors that may cause actual results to vary materially from anticipated results. We have posted charts on our website today that we plan to address during the call to supplement our comments. Please access our website at www.lockheedmartin.com and click on the Investor Relations link to view and follow the charts. With that, I'd like to turn the call over to Marillyn.
Thanks, Jerry. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us on the call today as we review our third quarter results. As today's release details, we continue to move forward financially, operationally, and strategically while delivering critical solutions to customers and returning value to stockholders. In addition to our discussion of financial results and outlooks, I want to highlight a few operational accomplishments in our business areas and other key events in the quarter, including DoD budget status and the successful disposition of our information systems and global solutions business. Looking at the summary financials, our team continued to deliver strong results across the corporation with third quarter sales, continuing operations profit, earnings per share, and cash from operations, all exceeding internal plans. We are driving towards achievement of full year 2016 goals, and we are looking forward to another strong year in 2017, fueled by top-line growth in our streamlined core areas. Bruce will provide a detailed review of the financial results, 2016 full-year outlook, 2017 preliminary trend outlook, and assumptions in his comments later in the call. The first area I want to speak to is our cash generation and deployment. This quarter, we achieved over $1.3 billion in cash from operations, bringing September year-to-date cash generation to approximately $4.5 billion. While we have achieved strong year-to-date cash performance, I would note that our fourth quarter outlook contains a higher than normal level of significant F-35 cash timing events. Successful closure of these events are dependent on completion of various contractual negotiations before the end of the year. During the quarter, our board of directors approved two key actions in the area of cash deployment. First, the quarterly dividend was increased to $1.82 per share and $7.28 annually. This action represents the 14th consecutive year that the dividend rate has been increased by a double-digit percentage. Second, share repurchase authority was increased by $2 billion, bringing total repurchase authority to over $4 billion at the end of the third quarter. This level of authority provides additional flexibility to continue to make significant future share repurchases. In recent actions taken by our board, these will enable us to continue our shareholder-friendly focus on returning cash to stockholders through dividends and share repurchases if market conditions and our fiduciary duties permit. Before examining our third quarter results, I wanted to briefly touch on the status of the fiscal year 2017 DoD and federal budgets. The government is currently operating under a short-term continuing resolution through December 9th. That limits expenditures to prior year fiscal levels. While we cannot predict budget resolution timing, we are hopeful that congressional deliberations can be concluded as soon as possible. While we think it unlikely, a continuing resolution and its associated budget constraints could be extended for the full FY17 year, should the varying budget positions remain unresolved. In the event of a full year CR, we would anticipate some level of impact against our 2017 orders and associated backlog level, but minimal impact to sales, earnings, and cash flows in 2017, as a large portion of our backlog work is already funded from prior fiscal years. There are multiple and differing budget scenarios under consideration for the FY17 budgets. Significant differences remain in the various proposed budgets' funding sources and the potential use of overseas continuing operations funds for additional DOD-based budget. Reconciliation of the different budget, DOD budget positions remains unresolved and could remain this way for some time. We hope this is not the case, that it is not in the best interest of our nation. A substantial delay would require an extension of the CR to enable continuation of government operations beyond December 9th. We continue to urge bipartisan negotiation and resolution of FY17 budgets to remove the uncertainty resulting from non-strategic, short-term government funding actions. Moving to operations, while there were numerous mission success events across the corporation this quarter, I will limit my comments to the F-35 Joint Strike Fighter program. The highlight of the quarter was the F-35A conventional takeoff and landing model being declared combat ready by the U.S. Air Force and achieving initial operational capability, or IOC. This declaration reflects the maturity and performance of the CTOL aircraft and successful achievement of all key criteria to reach IOC readiness. The IOC enables the U.S. Air Force to be the second branch of the military to field combat-ready F-35 aircraft as they join the U.S. Marine Corps with their operational F-35B aircraft in providing unequaled fifth-generation fighters to our nation and allies. With over 70% of the more than 3,000 aircraft production plan for the F-35 being the CTOL variant, achievement of IOC for this aircraft strengthens the foundation for future decades of fighter production for domestic and international customers. In addition to the achievement of the IOC milestone, the F-35 also demonstrated the benefit of its unique fused sensors in its first live-fire missile intercept event. By leveraging a U.S. Marine Corps F-35 and the U.S. Navy's Aegis weapons system, the aircraft demonstrated the ability of the F-35 to greatly expand the target identification and acquisition range in its support of naval integrated fire control missions. The F-35 served as an elevated sensor and detected an over-the-horizon missile threat. It then utilized its advanced data link to send data to an Aegis weapon system that subsequently engaged and destroyed the target. This fusion of sensors across multiple systems only begins to outline the potential enhanced warfighting capabilities and distributed lethality that F-35 aircraft will enable across our military forces. This capability is embedded in all F-35 variants today and is just one of the revolutionary technologies that this aircraft bring to our nation and allies. Turning to customer support and demand for the F-35, key milestones this past quarter included rollout of the first F-35A aircraft for the Japan Air Self-Defense Force, marking a major milestone in Japan's enhanced national security defense and strengthening the future of the U.S.-Japan Security Alliance. Japan continues to reflect a planned procurement of 42 aircraft for their national defense requirements. Beyond the activities for Japan, Norway became the first international partner nation to state its intention to participate in a multi-year, multinational block buy of the F-35. Norway outlined a request for 12 F-35 fighters in their 2017 budget and remains on track to their stated plan to purchase a total of 52 aircraft for their national defense. We're honored to partner with international F-35 customers to strengthen the security relationships among our nation and allies as we collectively field this fifth-generation fighter for decades to come. I'd like to turn to a different topic and provide you a status report on one of the strategic goals we outlined to you 2 years ago. At the time, we challenged ourselves to expand our focus and footprint overseas and established a goal to achieve 25% of annual sales from international customers. Due to the change in our portfolio content resulting from the acquisition of Sikorsky and the disposition of IS&GS, we are on track to exceed that goal later this year as the remaining business areas perform a significantly higher proportion of international work than did IS&GS. International work across the corporation is expanding, especially in the areas of the F-35 Joint Strike Fighter, missile defense systems, C-130J cargo planes, and tactical missiles. The aging of equipment in allied countries, coupled with an expanding level of global security needs, are creating significant demand for our portfolio of products in multiple regions around the world. Our proven and cost-effective solutions are securing awards from new customers worldwide. We are seeing demand for our equipment ranging from C-130J aircraft in France and Germany, to helicopters in Poland, to missile defense systems in the Asia-Pacific, Europe, and Middle East theaters. This demand helps strengthen growth as our international portfolio is growing at a faster rate than the DoD budget. Higher international work is also providing greater economies of scale that enhances our ability to improve the affordability of platforms and services to both domestic and international customers. We are expanding our efforts across all of our business areas to provide our products to international customers. With this focus remaining a key element in our growth strategy for the corporation, we now expect to increase our international sales content to at least 30% of total annual sales in the next few years. I am confident that we have the portfolio, strategy, and personnel to achieve this new, higher level as we move forward. I want to conclude my comments by recognizing one of the key accomplishments this past quarter, the successful completion of our strategic disposition of the IS&GS business to Leidos. Closure of the disposition through a tax-efficient reverse Morse trust better positions that business to generate shareholder value and opportunities for employees as they move forward outside our corporation. This RMT transaction generated the highest value creation benefits to our stockholders and allows us to focus even more intensely on our remaining core DoD portfolio. Completion of the transaction enabled retirement of over 9 million shares of our stock through the exchange offer, plus receipt of $1.8 billion in cash to our corporation. We are deploying that cash through dividends, share repurchases, and debt retirement, and are on track for full deployment of the cash before the end of this year. I'll close by stating that we have taken significant actions over the past year to reshape our portfolio and strengthen our core defense business. I'm confident this positions us well to grow and deliver long-term value to our stockholders. I'll now turn the call over to Bruce to review our financial performance and updated guidance in more detail, and then we'll open up the line for your questions.
Thanks, Marilyn. Good morning, everyone. As I highlight our key financial accomplishments, please follow along with the web charts we included with our earnings release today. Let's begin with chart 3 and an overview of our results for the quarter. Our third quarter performance builds upon our strong first half results, and we are ahead of our plan on all key financial measures through the first three quarters of the year. As you are aware, we completed the split off of the IS&GS business area during the quarter, and both our current and historical results are now stated on a continuing operations basis. During the second quarter call, we also identified several other events that we expected to occur in the third quarter that would impact our financial results, and we'll provide an update on these events in the coming charts. And we'll provide our updated 2016 outlook, taking into consideration all of these items in subsequent charts. So we're pleased with our strong results in the quarter and with our outlook for the year in total. Turning to chart 4, we compare our sales and segment operating profit this quarter with the third quarter of 2015. Sales were higher by $1.5 billion, or 15% this year, than last year. Similar to the second quarter, the growth was driven by the inclusion of Sikorsky into the results of RMS for about $1.2 billion and over $250 million in growth at Aeronautics, driven by higher F-35 volume. Segment operating profit was about $180 million higher than last year, with the growth coming primarily from Space Systems as a result of better performance and the book gain associated with the consolidation of AWE that we will discuss in more detail on the next chart. Chart 5 highlights the key financial events impacting earnings in the quarter that we previewed during the July call. From a continuing operations perspective, the largest impact was the $127 million book gain associated with our obtaining a controlling interest in AWE that resulted in a 34-cent favorable impact in the quarter and the year. That gain was partially offset by the initial amortization of an intangible asset associated with the gain, which reduced EPS in the quarter by a penny and 6 cents for the year. The intangible amortization will continue on an accelerated basis over the next 8 years. Next, we moved the FAS-CAS pension adjustment associated with IS&GS into discontinued operations, and that lowered EPS by 4 cents in the quarter and 15 cents for the year. And we updated our Sikorsky purchase accounting adjustments in the quarter, which lowered EPS by 2 cents in both the quarter and the year. We are substantially complete with the purchase accounting for Sikorsky and do not expect significant changes as we close this effort in the fourth quarter. All told, these impacts to continuing operations EPS added 27 cents in the quarter and 11 cents for the year. In discontinued operations, we recognized the book gain of about $1.2 billion associated with the disposition of IS&GS, as well as their 2016 operating results up until the August disposition date. These two items amounted to $4.32 of EPS in the quarter and $4.97 for the year. If you'll turn to Chart 6, we'll see how our earnings per share in the quarter compare with the EPS from 1 year ago. Our EPS in the quarter was $3.61, which was aided by the 27-cent benefit we described on the prior chart. In addition, the third quarter benefited from improved operating performance, a higher FAS-CAS adjustment, a lower tax rate, and lower share count than in the third quarter of 2015. On Chart 7, you can see our cash from operations this quarter compared to last year. Cash in the quarter was around $1.3 billion, about $200 million lower than the third quarter of 2015, and continues to be impacted by our decision to fund F-35 LRIPs 9 and 10 in excess of the amount of government funding. At the end of the quarter, that exposure was $950 million. While we did receive additional funding for LRIP 9 during the quarter, that funding was not sufficient to match the growth in both LRIP 9 and LRIP 10 expenditures in the quarter, resulting in the increased exposure from the second quarter. We remain hopeful that this situation will be resolved soon, but have concerns with receiving collections before year end, as we'll discuss when we show our revised outlook for the year in a few charts. Chart 8 shows the amount of cash returned to stockholders on a year-to-date basis. With just under $4.5 billion in cash from operations year-to-date and about $600 million in capital expenditures, our free cash flow so far this year is around $3.8 billion. With $1.5 billion in dividends and $1.3 billion in shares repurchased to date, we have returned $2.8 billion to stockholders, or 73% of free cash flow. And in the third quarter, we increased both our dividend rate and share repurchase authority, as Marilyn highlighted in her comments earlier. On Chart 9, you can see the significant reduction in our share count over time. From our peak share count of 456 million shares in 2002, we've reduced shares outstanding to 293 million, 36% less than we had at the peak. And adjusting our previously stated goal of reducing share count below 300 million shares by the end of 2017 for the 9 million of share reductions from the RMT exchange offer, we expect to achieve the restated goal of 291 million shares by the end of this year, a year earlier than planned. Chart 10 provides the updated outlook for the year. On the chart, we have three columns. The first shows the outlook we provided during the second quarter call. The middle column shows the same outlook adjusted for the removal of IS&GS results. And the third column shows the revised outlook compared with the middle column. We increased our sales outlook above the high end of the previous guidance to $46.5 billion, and this was driven primarily by higher sales expectations for aeronautics and space systems. Segment operating profit was also increased above the high end of the previous guidance, also driven by aeronautics and space systems. We increased earnings per share from continuing operations to around $12.10, reflecting the strong third quarter results. And we are giving two views of cash from operations, one assuming we do collect billings for the F-35 program before year end, and one assuming those collections slip into 2017. Assuming we do collect F-35 billings, our cash outlook is greater than or equal to $5.7 billion, a $350 million improvement over the restated second quarter outlook, and this improvement reflects strong cash performance at RMS, Space Systems, and Missiles and Fire Control. If the F-35 collections slip into 2017, our outlook for 2016 would be greater than or equal to $5 billion. The $700 million difference in the outlooks would be a digital event at year-end. If it slips out of 2016, 2017 will be $700 million higher. If it does not, 2016 will be $700 million higher, but the total cash between the 2 years will not change, and we'll elaborate more on that in a few charts. Chart 11 shows our prior sales outlook compared with the current outlook by business area. Compared with the midpoint of our previous guidance, we are increasing our sales outlook by $900 million, with space systems and aeronautics driving the change. Space systems increased due to the consolidation of AWE results into our financial statements, while aeronautics grew due primarily to continued higher-than-expected sales performance on the F-35 program. Chart 12 provides the same outlook update for our segment operating profit. As with sales, the segment operating profit outlook was driven by increases in aeronautics and space systems. The increase in aeronautics was driven primarily by the additional F-35 sales volume and improved performance across several programs. The increase in space systems was driven by the AWE consolidation gain, as well as improved performance in government satellites. On chart 13, we provide our preliminary trend information for 2017. We expect sales to increase around 7% above the 2016 level, with most of the increase coming from aeronautics' growth driven by F-35 production and sustainment, and missiles and fire control growth driven by higher air missile defense sales. RMS and space systems about offset each other next year, with slight growth in RMS being offset by lower sales in space systems, as the additional AWE volume for a full year in 2017 compared to a partial 2016 is more than offset by lower volume in our government satellite business, as well as the absence of any commercial launch activity next year. We expect segment operating margin to range between 10 to 10.5%, with the reduction from the 2016 level driven primarily by a full year of consolidated AWE sales in 2017 without the benefit of the gain in 2016, lower ULA equity earnings due to the mix and volume of launch vehicles expected in 2017, as well as the end of the $40 million annual deferred gain in 2016, and the significant volume increase in F-35 sales at a lower margin rate than the average for the corporation. Cash from operations is expected to be greater than or equal to $5.7 billion, again, assuming the F-35 collections slide into 2017. We'll provide more color on our longer-term views on cash from operations on the next chart. And we're planning to have at least $2 billion of share repurchases next year, which we expect will further reduce our share count below the 290 million share level. Our updated pension outlook assumes a FAS-CAS adjustment of $800 million of income, higher than we discussed during the second quarter call. Interest rates have risen slightly since the last call, and we now see a discount rate of 3.625% rather than the 3.5% we mentioned last quarter. In addition, a new longevity table was published late last week that results in another improvement to the FAS/CAS projection we provided last quarter. On the next two charts, we provide a longer-term view of both cash from operations and our pension impacts. Beginning with chart 14 and our longer-term trend for cash from operations, during the third quarter of 2014, we established a goal of generating more than $15 billion of total operating cash for the years 2015 to 2017, significantly higher than prior years, as we were expecting what we called a pension funding holiday for that three-year period. As you can see from the chart, assuming the F-35 collections slip into 2017, and based on our two-year view of cash for 2016 and 2017, we expect to generate around $15.8 billion over the three-year time frame, significantly exceeding the 2014 goal. If we look forward to the next 3 years, beginning with 2017, we also expect to generate at least $15 billion of total operating cash between 2017 and 2019, with all years at or near $5 billion, even after we begin to make required pension contributions in both 2018 and 2019. On chart 15, we provide a view of our expectations for both the FAS/CAS adjustment and cash implications of our pension plan over a longer time frame. All of our projections on this chart assume an 8% return on assets every year and a constant discount rate of 3.625%. As most of you know, we have a significant pre-funding balance that represents the difference between our pension contributions as required by ERISA and the recovery of those contributions via our CAS billings to the government. At the end of 2016, we expect that pre-fund credit balance to be around $7 billion, and we expect to recover a sizable portion of that $7 billion through the year 2025, which means that our CAS recoveries should exceed required pension contributions in all years through 2025, providing a cash tailwind even during years with required contributions. And as many of you also recall, our pension plan was modified in 2014 in a two-step process that results in the plan becoming fully frozen at the end of 2019. The first step of the plan modification began in 2016 with a freeze to the salary levels used to calculate pension benefits. This means that between 2017 and 2019, our FAS expense will decrease while our CAS expense increases to recognize the recovery of the pre-fund balance. At the end of 2019, we have the second step of our plan modification, a freezing of the years of service used to calculate pension benefits. And at this point, the plan becomes fully frozen. Beginning in 2020, we will no longer have service accruals for our salaried workforce, and this creates a number of changes to our FAS/CAS adjustment because of the full freeze. We will no longer recognize service costs for the frozen plan, and the amortization period for previous actuarial losses or gains will be extended from roughly 9 years to about 18 years in length. The combination of these changes will likely result in FAS income rather than FAS expense beginning in 2020, as our expected FAS asset returns will exceed the cost elements in our FAS calculation. This means we would expect to have considerable FAS/CAS adjustment income growth between 2017 to 2019, and then see significantly higher FAS/CAS adjustment income beginning in 2020 going forward for the foreseeable future based on current assumptions. That leads us to our summary on chart 16. We had strong operational and financial performance in the quarter and expect to finish the year in a similar fashion. We completed the IS&GS RMT transaction in a manner that was beneficial to the IS&GS business and Lockheed Martin stockholders. The strategic actions we've taken over the past year have strengthened our portfolio and will enable us for future growth. And we have long-term trends in cash from operations and pension impacts that position us to continue to deliver value to our stockholders. With that, we're ready for your questions. Andrea?
Thank you. In the interest of time, we are limiting you to one question. Please return to the queue for any follow-up questions. At this time, we are opening our lines for questions. Please press star 1 to enter the queue. To exit the queue, press pound. Our first question comes from Seth Seifman with J.P. Morgan. Your line is open.
Hey, thanks very much, and good morning. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit more about the LRIP negotiations. I'm sure there's not a lot of detail you can go into, but can you talk in general terms maybe about what the sticking points here are? I know it's gone on for many months longer than expected. Do you see, Bruce, any risk to the margin guidance you've given, or maybe any upside to the margin guidance you've given based on how those negotiations pan out, or is that not really kind of what's on the table now?
Let me just start with the negotiations. It's this is a very large contract. It's the largest contract to date on the program. So there's a lot of data. There's a lot of work that has to happen in those types of negotiations. And we are making progress. And both parties want to get this contract right. So it takes time to do that. So I would say we continue to make progress on it. Bruce, you want to cover the margin side?
Yeah. Thanks for the question. You sort of asked what were the sticking points here, and I'll say they're the typical they're the typical points that enter into every contractual negotiation. They revolve around what's the cost to perform the contract, what are the terms and conditions associated with that contract, and what's the profit level for the contractor for performing that contract. And I'd say we haven't really reached closure on any of those three, but we're making progress, every day towards that closure. So still hopeful we'll close soon. I think the latter part of your question was, were there risks to the margins? And you should think of at least the near-term margins are really impacted by contracts that were negotiated much prior to LRIPs 9 and 10. Especially 2016 and 2017 has very little, if anything, to do with the margin performance in LRIP 9 and 10. The latter years, obviously, are much greater impacted. We're still looking to have margins on the F-35 program eventually get to mirror or mimic what we've seen in the similar life cycle of the F-16 programs and C-130 programs, and that's still our objective as we sit here today.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Myles Walton with Deutsche Bank. Your line is open.
Thanks. Good morning. Could I ask a question on the capital deployment or cash deployment? I think, Marilyn, you said you're in position to disposition the Leidos dividend through the end of the year. And I think, Bruce, you said you'd overachieve the share repurchase reduction by the end of this year. Just a clarification, how much do you intend to repo through the end of the year? And did, Bruce, you mean 291 diluted share count at the end of the year or period end share count? Thanks.
Yeah, so good questions, Miles. And on the capital deployment side, we're still looking at about $2 billion for the year. I think we've had a little bit of benefit. We still have we haven't talked about it in a while. We still have some remaining options eligible to be exercised, and those options are just proving to be a lot stickier in the past few years than they have been in the years previously. So we're getting some benefit from where we had plan levels of option exercise just coming in lighter than expected. You talked about the $1.8 billion on the Leidos special cash payment. So we've spent most of that through the first three quarters. I want to say it's around $400-some-odd million. I know it's a little less than that as we sit here today. We made the debt retirement of about $500 million in the month of September. And a pretty good chunk of it has gone towards share repurchases and dividends, including the third quarter dividend that we just made. So our expectation is that we will have consumed the full $1.8 billion in capital allocations by the end of the year. And I'm sorry, you asked one other question, Miles, about the 291. Was that an average, or was that the point estimate at the end of the year? It is the year in view as far as shares outstanding.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Noah Poponak with Goldman Sachs. Your line is open.
Hi, good morning, everyone.
Morning.
Bruce, the 7% total company revenue growth in 2017, can you tell us what that is organically? It looks like AWE is not apples to apples, maybe by about 2%. Is that right? And is there anything else? And then I just wondered if you all could speak to your view of the sustainability of whatever that organic revenue growth rate is on a multi-year basis, in your view.
Yeah, I'll take a shot at that, Noah. So I think you're pretty close to being right. So I think you should think of the AWE, which I'm not sure if that's organic or inorganic, by the way, but you should think of AWE is contributing about roughly $400 million in sales this year, probably growing to a little over a billion one next year, so maybe $700 million of change. So that's probably a little less than 2%. So, we would think the growth organically, as you describe it, from year over year is probably in the high fours, maybe a little bit around 5% or so next year. Going forward for the next 3 years or so, we still believe, we kind of talked about in the second quarter call that we think we have growth ranging from about 3 to 5% in the out years. We still feel good about that, although it's probably not as steady over those years as you might think. So we had the sort of the bigger uptick that we're expecting in 2017, a lot of that driven by the F-35 program. We see additional growth in 2018, also by F-35, but there's a countervailing issue happening because we have the end of the F-16 production line and the end of C-5 deliveries, both of which occur in 2018. So while we still see growth, organic growth in 18, it'll be a little bit diminished because of those two events, but still better than we've seen for the last few years. And then, frankly, as we sit here today and look at the longer term, 2019 is a higher growth rate than 2018, in part because of the absence of those two events.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Rich Safran with Buckingham Research. Your line is open.
Marilyn, Bruce, Jerry, good morning.
Hey, Rich.
Good morning.
There are a lot of questions out there about what happens after your pension funding holiday expires in 18, so I thought a bit. I'd ask about slide 14. It shows some significant gains, even when you resume your pension contributions. And what I wanted to know was, have your pension contributions declined a lot? I had thought that you were talking about numbers like north of $1 billion, maybe $1.5 billion in 2018. So I thought maybe you'd comment on how you're able to generate the cash flows that you're discussing today in the slide.
Yeah, I'll take that one, Rich. So you're right, and I think just from conversations that we've had at conferences and with investors as they've toured through Bethesda, there was a lot of misunderstanding perhaps relative to our ability to continue to generate cash flow from operations when we started having pension contributions. So we wanted to tee up that we do think we're going to continue to have strong cash from operations, which is the reason why we came up with the new goal, essentially the same as the old goal, for a three-year period with a common 2017 in both of those three-year goals. The amount of pension contributions, we have zero in 17. For all intents and purposes, we have some sort of minor contributions relative to the Sikorsky collective bargaining pension plan, but for all intents and purposes, that's pretty minimal. In 2018 and 2019, it's still a little fluid at this point in time, but you should think of, both of those years probably ranging between $1.5 billion and $2 billion of pension contributions. So, we are able to essentially mimic what we did with the pension funding holiday because we do expect to have sort of organic, if I could use that term, operational cash growth. And most of that comes from the F-35 program going forward, the Sikorsky business, which we've described as sort of treading water for a number of years from a cash flow perspective, and then as we finish a lot of the development programs and a couple of the loss programs, frankly, that we have within Sikorsky, we expect to see a return to cash generation. And then the last one is the international growth that we talked about, or that Marilyn talked about earlier. So those three elements, and then sort of everyone else holding constant, is contributing mightily towards that level. And then I'll remind you, maybe, I know you know this, Rich, but while we do make those pension contributions, and that's a hit to operating cash, they're also tax deductible. So, you know, it's a 35% offset to what we see there as well.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Peter Arment with Baird. Your line is open.
Yes. Good morning, Bruce, Marilyn.
Hey, Peter.
I wanted to, Marilyn, I guess, kind of your comments on the 25% international. I can remember back when it was, you know, down in the low teens, and obviously you've had the benefit here of some of the portfolio shaping that, that boosted that. But I wanted to just get at, like, kind of the visibility around that. When you look at that number continuing to grow and with the goal of getting it out to 30%, like, how much, you know, like, if we think about 17, what's already in backlog or what you have to win when you look at that kind of percentage on the international, just given the concerns about sometimes there's delays on those contracts?
Thanks for the question, Peter. I would say, you know, the biggest growth area for us is the F-35. I mean, certainly we've got a lot of international sales on the F-35, and so that will be the largest one. The second one is on missile defense. We've seen a lot of demand expanding for missile defense in the Asia-Pacific and the Middle East, as well as in Europe. So THAAD and Aegis Ashore, Patriot, MEADS, and, you know, last year our international sales were almost $9.6 billion, and so when you think about the backlog that we've also been building over time, it's around 30% of that, 30% of our backlog is international today. So we've got a lot of already booked business that will come in toward those international sales. And so I think our portfolio is really well positioned for growth. We continue to have a pull for not only missile defense, but munitions and other things in the market, particularly in the Middle East. And we're seeing growing interest in things like helicopters in Poland and, you know, as I mentioned earlier, the C-130J and markets that we hadn't been in before, like France and Germany. So we expect that we'll continue to have a pull for international growth.
Yep. Welcome back, Peter.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Jason Gursky with Citi. Your line is open.
Yeah, good morning, everyone. Hey, Bruce, just a quick clarification question and then one for Marilyn. Clarification question, the international revenue streams that you see coming down the pipe here, do you think that these will be margin accretive for you given the mix? And then, Marilyn, can you just spend a few minutes on missile defense as it relates to international? Talk a little bit about the competitive environment, the partnering environment, and how you see this market developing over time. Which products are you going to be leading with, participating in, and does it really matter to you, you know, which products eventually kind of come out on top from a competitive perspective?
Okay, Jason, I'll take the first one on. You described as the international revenue stream, and I think the question was whether that was margin accretive or not. You know, you should think of most of the, in fact, just the overwhelming majority of the growth in the international business going forward as being FMS or foreign military sales in nature, as opposed to direct commercial sales in nature. And frankly, most of that growth, you know, think of that on programs like the F-35 and the PAC-3 missile and the THAAD air missile defense system, most of those are being negotiated, even though they're FMS, most of them are being negotiated concurrently with the U.S. government's needs. So I would not expect them to see, huge benefits margin-wise from the growth we're seeing in the international business. Some of that may materialize. You know, we're starting to see sort of pockets of direct commercial sales within that 30%. And, you know, to the extent that that happens, that's usually at a higher margin than the FMS, but not hugely accretive would be my overall take.
So, Jason, on your questions around missile defense, I mean, you know, sort of a lay of the land relative to competition versus partnering and developing over time, if I could just sort of walk through some of the products. I mean, from a PAC-3 standpoint, you know, we do partner with Raytheon on the Patriot system, so we continue to sell PAC-3s around the world, and we just declared our initial operating capability for the PAC-3 MSE, the Missile Segment Enhancement, which is extended range and greater capabilities. So we're going to have a continued demand for the PAC-3 MSE. I think we'll see countries that will look at buying that greater capability. On THAAD, you know, as we, it's in the UAE today, of course, and there's a strong pull for THAAD in the Middle East, Qatar, and you know, potentially Saudi and others will be looking at THAAD going forward. On Aegis, you know, Aegis, we just with the Korea and Japan, they're adding it to their ships, and we'll have other countries, I think, moving along in that regard. Aegis Ashore, we've set up our Aegis Ashore in Romania, and we'll see an opportunity in Poland. And then, you know, from a competition standpoint, MEADS, the Medium Extended Air Defense System, now that Germany has made their selection, we expect other NATO countries to be looking at MEADS and maybe some Middle East countries looking at MEADS as a potential for their capability with its 360-degree capability and the, you know, really the next generation beyond the Patriot system as a new system. So Poland is still looking at MEADS, for example, and we've had some interest from some Middle East countries on MEADS. And then the ground-based strategic deterrent is another opportunity for us on growth and missile defense in the U.S. And so not just in the international marketplace, we continue to see growth on the international, in the domestic market for our missile defense capabilities. So I, hopefully that answers your question. I think over time, you know, the defensive systems that countries need, we expect they'll continue to put in place. The threats are not diminishing, they're increasing. And so the defensive systems that we can provide are what we hear from countries around the world that they want, whether it's Japan or Saudi Arabia or the UAE or others. As I travel around the world, that is a top priority for these countries.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Pete Skibitski with Drexel Hamilton. Your line is open.
Hi, good morning, guys. Nice quarter.
Morning.
Thank you, Pete.
I had a couple of program questions, one on the F-16. It looked like maybe you guys got approval during the quarter for an incremental order. I thought maybe it was Bahrain. Is that not part of the current planning? I was just curious what your thoughts on that. And then also when you expect the Qatar THAAD order to actually be booked.
I'll try that, Pete. So I think the Bahrain order is there's now at least consideration from a government-to-government discussion about the opportunity to make that an order. It's not finalized by any of the stretch of the imagination. And none of the numbers that I talked about previously in terms of the growth going forward assume the Bahraini aircraft in the F-16 line. So right now it's not in there. You know, longer term for the F-16 program, as I sort of teed up to Noah's question, I think it was, relative to the growth going forward, you know, right now the F-16 line comes to an end at the end of, or excuse me, the middle of 2018 or thereabouts. If we were to get the Bahrain order, you know, that would extend it probably another year or so. But you should think that the F-16 program has not gone away at all. In fact, if we look at 2017, I said 18. I think the line comes to an end in 2017. Excuse me, I spoke a year off there. I think we have 6 aircraft deliveries in 2017. That's the wrap-up of the program from a build cycle versus 12 this year, and yet the sales on the F-16 program are higher next year than they are this year. And in part, that's because we have, you know, you should think of it as 3 large international upgrade programs going on concurrently, or pretty much concurrently. We've got a Singaporean, a Taiwanese, and a soon-to-be South Korean upgrade of their existing F-16 aircraft, which is actually, as it turns out, more than offsetting the production quantity aircraft drop-off next year. So hopefully a little more color there. THAAD Qatar, you know, we had hoped to close that this year, looking towards the end of this calendar year. That's in all likelihood not going to happen. We have it planned and expect to close that in 2017.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Sam Pearlstein with Wells Fargo. Your line is open.
Good morning.
Good morning. Hi, Sam.
I was wondering if you could talk a little bit more just about Sikorsky. The purchase accounting changes, does that affect anything on a go-forward basis in terms of the GAAP earnings or loss on a run rate, and if you can at all size the favorable adjustment that you called out in the third quarter? And somewhat related is another helicopter manufacturer talked about seeing a bottoming in the commercial side of the business. I'm wondering if you've seen anything similar or what you're thinking about the commercial helicopter business now.
Yeah, so let's see. On the purchase accounting, Sam, I'd say that's a little bit of just sort of housekeeping stuff, nothing hugely dramatic that occurred there. As you know, some of these sorts of adjustments for things like inventory and so forth moved around a little bit, in part because of the timing of some of the deliveries associated with that inventory and just a better understanding of the business in total. All of the adjustments are required to be done 1 year after the purchase date, which I believe is November 6th. So all those are required to be finalized in the fourth quarter. You know, the one benefit that you should see going forward is we are going to have a lightening up, if you will, of the total conforming accounting and purchase accounting adjustments on Sikorsky of about $150 million a year or so going forward. So from 16 to 17, that was what was always in the plan. The purchase accounting adjustments that we see happening this year really don't impact that much. You just talked about opportunities relative to, you know, the bottoming out in the military, in the commercial marketplace and so forth. We're seeing opportunities pop up. I think Marilyn hit these pretty well in terms of, you know, the Polish Black Hawk deal, which would be actually built and delivered out of Poland from our facility there, is an interesting opportunity. You know, we have other international opportunities, although they're kind of coming in dribs and drabs, not huge orders, but they're still helping to sort of fill the backlog. As far as the commercial Hilo market, we don't expect to see that change. In fact, our projections and what we gave in the 7% increase next year essentially says we're flat to maybe a few less than in 2016. And we're hopeful, and the numbers would plan and suggest that there's a slight uptick in 2018, but nothing huge. So we think this is a fairly slow recovery and not a spike by any stretch of the imagination, but nothing between 2016 and 2017.
Primarily on the oil and gas helicopters in that regard. I mean, we are looking for other opportunities for commercial helicopters, search and rescue, paramilitary, and things of that nature, but as Bruce said, the bulk of the commercial helicopter sales in the past have been in the oil and gas, and so we'll look for recovery further out.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Howard Rubel with Jefferies. Your line is open.
Well, thank you. Two things. One is, you know, got to give Jerry a shout out. I don't know whether you're going to be on the next call or not, but I think that's important. And
depends on how he does this call, Jeff. Depends on how he does this call, Howard.
Or it depends on whether he likes, you know, whether Marilyn likes my question or not, you know. But in all seriousness, you know, in the past you've done a nice job of usually having risk reduction items that work in your favor. And if I tallied the numbers this quarter, outside of missiles in space, most of them went against you, kind of to the tune of around $150 million. Is there anything there that you can point to that's systematic, or is it just a one-off items?
Yeah. So, Howard, I'll take that one on. You know, as we look at the third quarter adjustments, I mean, there were ins and outs across the business area, but it's actually very close to where we were at the third quarter of last year. Second quarter was quite a bit lighter. I think that's just, you know, that's the sequencing of milestone events. That's the sequencing of performance improvements, and they're just by their nature lumpy. But I don't think, you know, I think you asked the question, is it systemic or not? I don't think there's anything systemic, and that's not what's driving, you know, the marketplace going forward. I mean, we're going to end the year, you know, next quarter and for this year in 2016, at least as we sit here today, it looks pretty similar to what we did from a planned step-ups in the fourth quarter versus 2013. We may end the year a little bit light, you know, just relative to historical levels, so probably in the, you know, lower 30%. I think last year we did like 34-ish or thereabouts percent. But we could have some improvement in the fourth quarter as well. So we'll tell you where we actually ended up at the end of the call in January. But I don't think, back to your original question, there's anything systemic there.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Joe DeNardi with Stifel. Your line is open.
Yeah, thanks very much. Bruce, I think you mentioned either last call or the one before that 2017, or I'm sorry, this year would be the bottom for aeronautics margins and you'd start to get some improvement next year. I'm wondering if that's still your view, and then given the moving pieces in 2018 with F-16 and C-5 coming down, do aero margins come back down, or is that level in 17, you know, something you can grow off of?
Yeah, so let me try to address that, Joe. I did say that you've got a good memory. I think the wild card here is when I said that, I didn't expect to have the significant amount of growth on the F-35 program, particularly the sustainment piece of the F-35 program going from 2016 to 2017. I mean, it's just amazing the growth that we are seeing on the sustainment program compared to what we previously thought, or at least what I previously thought and what I was basing that margin comment on. So the margin at Aero will likely be a little bit lighter in 2017 than it was in 2016. And most of that, but maybe not all of that, is driven by the F-35 significant ramp up. And again, you know, what I always call the margin dilutive algebraic effect of just a lower margin program growing faster than the rest of the business area. And that is a dilutive effect on the margins. But as we look forward into 2018, and I did tee up the C-5 and the F-16, again, F-16's not changing total sales volume all that much, although the aircraft quantities are coming down. C-5 is actually, again, a little bit dilutive to the overall margin. But because of the F-35 growth that's occurring, again, between 18 and 17, I think the margins kind of stay fairly constant, probably as we look at this time for 2017 and 2018.
Andrew, this is Jerry. I know we're coming up on the hour, but because our comments were kind of long today, I want people in the queue to not think they have to turn off here in the next 2 minutes. I think we have an ability to go another 15 minutes, so if we could just extend it a little bit.
Absolutely. Our next question comes from George Shapiro with Shapiro Research. Your line is open.
Yeah, Bruce, I wanted to pursue the F-35 a little bit more. Deliveries this quarter were less than last year's quarter, and actually year-to-date, I think you're one behind. So you can just comment on what that is causing that and what it'll be in the fourth quarter. And on that score, if I just look at your guidance, it implies over $5 billion of revenues in aeronautics in the fourth quarter, which is usually a strong quarter, but the step up is much more than what we've seen in the past. So we could discuss that. And then last, if I look at the $300 million of higher F-35 sales you called out, profit only up $25 million, so 8.3% implied margin. That's a little lower than what we've seen in the past, so maybe if you could comment on that. Thanks.
Yeah, George, you got your money's worth there. Good job. So F-35, you know, deliveries, and I should remind you, you know, this is a POC cost-to-cost contract, so the revenue is not impacted by deliveries. But you did make the right observation, George. The deliveries were lighter than the third quarter than we'd otherwise suggest. And This is primarily because, and I know you guys have read about this, but we have these insulation tubes that affected a number of our aircraft in the field, as well as the aircraft being produced. And while we have the fix for that issue in place, you know, think of this as a supplier-driven item that we had a sort of an out-of-spec delivery that was installed in the aircraft. And as we go through and fix those for the aircraft in the field, we're also going back and fixing the aircraft that are affected with those lines in production. And that is going to cause us to end up a little lighter in F-35 deliveries this year than what we previously had said. We think we know the solution for that, as I said, and we think we recover such that by the end of 2017, we're sort of back on contractual schedule, hopefully sooner than the end of 2017. But that's the expectation right now. The other thing you talked about was F-35 being greater than $5 billion in the quarter, or aeronautics being greater than $5 billion in the quarter. That'll be the highest quarter, I think, in the history of aeronautics. But that's sort of tracking, George, to what we expect the annual run rate to look like in 2017. You know, years ago, we had talked about the aeronautics business area being about a $20 billion per year revenue business in 2015. It turns out we were close, but that's likely going to happen now in 2017 as opposed to 2015. So that's tracking right with our expectations. And then the last question on the $300 million in sales and the risk retirements, and I think you said 8-point-something% profit. That's sort of in line with what we've done. We've had quarters previous in this year that were higher, but that's because we had some of the risk retirements that we were talking to Howard about earlier that occurred in previous quarters. When we have those risk retirements, we kind of get a spike in the margin. We just didn't have as many this quarter, so it's the run rate you're seeing there is about the run rate without risk retirements in the quarter.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Rob Spingarn with Credit Suisse. Your line is open.
Hi there.
Hey, Rob.
Morning.
Morning.
Bruce, I wanted to go back to Rich's question on the three-year goal back on slide 14. But if I understand it correctly, you're going into these next 3 years with the same cash flow goal, maybe a little higher, despite a $3 to $4 billion headwind from pension contributions. If we take 18 and 19 and add that together, if I heard that right. And so you talked about F-35 and Sikorsky providing some revenue and earnings growth as an offset. How much more is coming from CAS reimbursement? In other words, when we think about this, what is the underlying revenue increase and how do the margins trend with that revenue?
Yeah, so first comment, Rob, is you did hear it right. That is what we said, and I think you got the math to all that correct. And honestly, that's an interesting question because, you know, actually the sort of the CAS recovery or the pension recovery associated with CAS is diminishing going forward. So, again, you know, we talked about 15 to 17 having a pension holiday. That means we're not going to make pension contributions. So a significant level of sort of pension recovery because of that. Going forward, and this is what I was trying to convey in my remarks, while we have pension contributions at the level that you just described, the CAS recovery is also increasing pretty significantly and stays fairly high throughout this entire time frame. And that's, again, a good chunk of that is recovering that $7 billion of sort of pre-fund credit that we have at the end of this year. So that has to sort of come back at some point in the CAS billings that we have to the government. That's what sustains us over that time. Even though the net cash for pension is coming down, the offset is due to operational cash going up.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of David Strauss with UBS. Your line is open.
Thanks. Good afternoon now.
Hey, David.
Bruce, to follow up on that question, then another question. The CAS recovery, which I think in 2016 is $2 billion, I think you've said $2.3 billion in 17 previously. What does that grow to out in by 2019? And then my other question on Sikorsky, performing better than I think your initial guidance for this year. I think you talked about intangibles coming down next year. I thought it was more around integration costs coming down. But if you could just give us an idea of, you know, what operating profit out of Sikorsky or margins might look out of Sikorsky on an all-in basis next year. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you, David. So on the CAS side, you've got the numbers right for both 16 and 17. And rather than give you a precise for 18 and 19, I'll just say that CAS increases in 2018 over 2017, and it increases again in 2019 over 2018. And you should think of those as, you know, several hundreds, millions of dollars kind of levels between each year there. And that's again back to Rob's question. That's one of the things that's driving the cash recovery over that period of time. Sikorsky is doing better than we'd expected, at least through the first three quarters of this year. I think we started off with probably a little more conservative view of Sikorsky, just a little bit of not knowing the business as well as I think we do now. And so we've seen some performance improvements or some risk retirements, I should say, in the third quarter that translate into, you know, better performance than we were seeing in the first two quarters of the year. I think you also talked about, you know, the changes in intangible, and I might have misspoken. I think I was talking about conforming accounting and intangible amortization all rolled up into one. And there's definitely some reductions in some of the conforming accounting adjustments, as well as I think one of the things that I teed up in the January call was there was about $30 or $40 million of sort of severance costs left over in 2016 from a severance action that was taken in the middle of 2015 that does not repeat itself in 2017. That, along with sort of lower integration costs in 2017 compared to 2016 is what's driving the improvements that I talked about.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Doug Harned with Bernstein. Your line is open.
Hello. Good afternoon.
Hey, Doug.
Good afternoon. On F-35, I wanted to go back to what you said before about performance being ahead of your expectations, and particularly around sustainment. I'm curious as to, first, why was it a surprise that sustainment was larger than you thought? And then second, when you look forward, how does this larger amount of sustainment work? How do you see that going forward? Does that change the way that you look at the margin trajectory for the F-35 over the next few years?
Yeah, good questions, Doug. I'll take that one on. So, you know, the performance that you described as performance, I would not necessarily characterize as performance, as just the growth and sustainment activity that we see. And why the surprise, or why did it seem like a surprise? I think that, you know, to a certain extent, this is a little bit, I won't say out of our control entirely, but it is dependent upon when the government establishes sort of the base setups for the induction of F-35 aircraft, and what level of support those bases need in order to be ready to take on, you know, operational F-35 aircraft. And I'll say we were probably a little conservative, or maybe a lot conservative, in our forecast as far as thinking the level of, if you just think of all the things that have to be at a base day one when you start delivering aircraft to that base, I mean, all the alternate mission equipment, all the support equipment, I mean, things to pull aircraft around, ladders to get on the air. I mean, you can just imagine all the stuff that has to go into a base. And I'll say we were probably pretty light on that forecast until we had some of those bases under our belt. And now we have some of those bases under our belt, and we have a better understanding of what sort of the average needs are of the aircraft going forward. And so that's what we're projecting going forward.
And I think we've got a much better handle on that going forward than we had in the past. That's all good news, as far as I'm concerned. Looking forward, you asked about the margin trajectory. I wouldn't expect to see huge swings in margin associated with sustainment. We typically get margins on sustainment, and they're kind of negotiated concurrently with the aircraft program. They're kind of negotiated at about similar levels of profitability, so I wouldn't expect to see a swing either way because of production or sustainment. I mean, I might remind you that, you know, over time, the development program, the SDD contract, is winding down over time, and again, that'll end eventually unless we continue to put development efforts on there, but that's going down next year. That's one of the things that's helping to mitigate some of the aeronautics ROS dilution from the F-35 program.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Carter Copeland with Barclays. Your line is open.
Hey, good afternoon, and I'd also like to extend a thanks to Jerry should you choose to ride off into the Florida sunshine before next quarter. You've been a real force for our world, so thanks a lot.
Thanks,
look, just a couple of clarifications in the interest of time. One, Bruce, the pension contribution, the 1.5 to 2 you mentioned for 18 to 19, correct me if I'm wrong, I thought that used to be 1.5. If that changed, I wondered if you could just tell us kind of what drove that. And then the second one is on the profit delta on the C-130 that you called out in the release. It looks like that's sort of 1,200 basis points lower. You know, how much of that should we think is sort of difference in booking rate under the new contract versus adjustments unrelated to volume that are different year over year? Thanks a lot.
Yeah, thanks, Carter, for the question. So, you know, I teed up the $1.5 billion, I think, a while back, and I think it's – I gave a range today, as you no doubt picked up, from $1.5 billion to $2 billion. You should think of that as just sort of asset returns compounding, and whether or not we're probably giving a little leeway there as far as, you know, we've assumed 8% returns going forward. We've assumed about a 5% return on assets in 2017. You know, the underperformance to the 8% has a compounding effect that says you have to have higher CAS contributions going forward, and that's simplistically the reason for the range we're giving today is simply the asset returns. C-130, you know, previous years we did have some pretty good size pickups or step-ups or risk retirements relative to the third quarter last year, but you're also seeing, as you described it, sort of the lower booking rate on the newly negotiated multi-year contract that has an effect of having a lower profit rate than we've seen in the past years on the C-130 program.
Andrea, I think we're coming up on the extra end of 15 minutes. Maybe final comments here by Marilyn?
Thanks, Jerry. Well, so as we conclude the call today, I'd like to end by reiterating that the corporation completed an excellent quarter, and we continue to build on our momentum. We have a robust backlog, and as we look at an increasing DoD budget, we're well positioned for top-line growth and strong cash flows in the future. Before we leave the call today, I also want to take a moment to recognize that this is Jerry's last earnings call, and before he retires at the end of this year. And Jerry, thank you for everything that you've done for me and for the corporation. You're truly the consummate IR professional, and you will be missed, as you've heard from some of your colleagues on the phone today. And let me, at this time, also welcome Greg Gardner, who is Jerry's successor. Most of you have known Greg for several years. Jerry and Greg will work over the next few months to ensure that there's a smooth transition. So again, thank you for joining us on the call today. We look forward to speaking to you on the next earnings call in January, when we will review our 2016 full-year results and provide our formal 2017 guidance. Andrea, that concludes the call today.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for participating in today's conference. This concludes the program, and you may now disconnect. Everyone have a great day.